From Murphy to Manzio, extraordinary athletes, coaches, administrators, and contributors have impacted the North Carolina sports landscape. For some, their talents left an indelible mark, so much so, they are enshrined in the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame. It's time to chat with one of those Hall of Famers who dared to be as tall and stately as our longleaf pines. Here is your host of 15 Minutes of Fame, Chris Edwards.
Welcome to another episode of 15 Minutes of Fame. I'm Chris Edwards. Today on the podcast, we chat with Judy Rose, the longtime athletics director for the Charlotte 49ers. We talk about Judy's career as a basketball player, a basketball coach, and ultimately an administrator to starting football at the Division I level with the 49ers, and what it's like to be inside the room as you select those 68 teams that will participate in the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. All that and more coming up today with the North Carolina Sports Hall of Famer, Judy Rose. Judy, thank you so much for the time, and welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's start here at the beginning of your journey. You played basketball at Winthrop. I'm curious, where did you develop your love for sports and your love for basketball to play it in college?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm from a large family, six children, and five girls, one boy, and we were from a small town in South Carolina, Blacksburg. My graduating class had like 89 individuals when I was a senior. So in a town like that, and in a family like that, I will say, you kind of have to make your own fun and do things. We didn't have a lot of other activities in a small town like Blacksburg. And so sports became something that everybody in our family just participated in. And my parents thought it was good for us to be involved in school activities. So we were involved in clubs and things, but every one of us played sports in high school.
You spent time at Tennessee as a graduate assistant, kind of coaching before you came to Charlotte as an assistant coach and then into administration. I'm curious, what did you learn about yourself and why you wanted to work in athletics during your time as a coach, whether it be a GA or an assistant basketball coach?
You know, I've always wanted to help people. And being able to do it through sport seemed to me to be the best fit for me. I originally had planned to coach on the high school level. And then when I did my student teaching at Winthrop, and I was in a junior high school, I thought, oh my goodness, I don't know about this. I mean, it was just so different from what I'd anticipated and different from what I had been when I was in high school. I mean, there were fights in the locker room. It was all kind of stuff. And I'm just like, little jealousy things. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to be a babysitter. That's not what I want to be. And so I decided to go then on to get my master's degree immediately after my undergrad at Winthrop, and best decision I could have ever made. It was eye-opening for me at Tennessee, and I was offered an assistantship and turned it down because really I didn't know how difficult it would be from a studying standpoint for getting my master's degree. I didn't have anything to compare it to because nobody in my family had gotten their master's. And so I turned it down initially and then was reoffered it after the first quarter there and accepted it and was teaching classes there. I think I taught bowling and strength and conditioning. It just gave me insight into what did I ultimately want to do? And then the opportunity to be one of the assistant coaches with Pat Summitt was just real eye-opening for me. She was the same age, but her experiences had been far greater in regards to playing internationally in the World Games and all of that. So I learned so much from Pat and Sylvia Hatchell, who was also an assistant. So the three of us kind of became like the three musketeers or whatever. We were great friends and remain great friends. I lost Pat too early. Those relationships and the opportunities to teach and coach help present and provide me kind of a platform of what I wanted to do. And that was to coach and teach, primarily coach on the collegiate level.
You obviously got into administration, had a great career. Was there a moment or like an aha moment that you could pinpoint where you decided that, hey, working in athletic administration would be something you wanted to do as you transitioned away from coaching?
You know, I'm not sure it was an aha moment. I can't say exactly what did it, but one thing was when I was coaching, I was single at the time. And I thought, you know, if I wanted to get married And I said, if I get married and have a family, what happens if I have a child and the child gets sick and let's say has chickenpox and we have an away basketball game? It's my responsibility to take care of both. Am I going to have to choose? And at that time, Chris, coaches weren't getting paid. Women's coaches were not getting paid like they are today. You know, a lot of them have nannies today to take care of their children or whatever. And that wasn't, and I come from that big family background. And I'm like, I don't think I could make the decision to leave my child. And at the same time, it's my job. I have to do that. So what would I do? That weighed heavy on me. Now it's interesting. How many years later, I never had children. Okay. I married somebody that had been married before and had children and said, been there, done that, you know, not real interested. and you know, it wasn't something I had to do was have children. So that really played heavy on my mind and me making a decision from a scheduling and timing standpoint. And I'll say this, I was a better administrator than I was a coach. I loved coaching. I enjoyed it, but I don't want to say I outgrew it because that sounds terrible, but I think my passion changed a little bit. And I saw that where I felt my strength was in administration.
Well, let's talk about your years as an administrator. 43 years at the University of Charlotte, 28 as the school's athletics director. When you think back on your time at Charlotte, obviously a ton of accomplishments. So what do you think are the top two or three things that you take away from what you're most proudest of as an athletics director?
Well, I'd say probably starting football as late in the game as we did as a university. And the hardest part was convincing our administration that we needed to do it. And another one was my involvement on the national level, being on the first female to be on the men's basketball selection committee and the first female to be on the men's NIT selection committee. And I say that I loved coaching and I loved my kids, and I'm still in touch with them and to this day. But when we started football, it started when I was on the basketball committee, and I remember Mike Trangese, who was the commissioner of the Big East at the time. He was on the committee. He was our chair. And he came up to me at one of our meetings and he said, "So Judy, what are you going to do without football? Well, what's going to happen to y'all?" And at this time, you know, he knew a whole lot more than I did because he was on that level where they were having discussions about football and moving forward in different conference affiliations. And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Our basketball program's good." And he goes, "Yeah, but you're probably going to get left out without football." And so I thought about it and I, you know, mulled it over, talked with my staff about it and began to make some noise at the university about it. And I was, you know, politely told, back off, you know, we're not real interested. But what I did was for 8 years prior to us even thinking about football, I gathered my senior staff and we started meeting and offsite. Some of my assistants lived close by and we would just leave and go to their house. And we had this in the living room, those big post-it notes you could put on the wall, you know, and I'm like, we don't know what we don't know. So we've got to figure out what we don't know in order to add football. And we did and spent a lot of time doing that and visited Wake Forest on game day. They gave us free rein to walk, go everywhere, wherever we wanted to go and do it. We visited Old Dominion, who was in our conference at the time and had the same privileges there. And we didn't just take our athletic staff. We took the folks, the leaders at the university, not the chancellor, but we took vice chancellors over academics, vice chancellor student affairs, every element that we were going to have to develop as part of our task and our program. And, you know, thankfully it paid off. And I will say this, Phil Dubois didn't really want football. But the trustees, you know, signed in on it. And Pete Durz's good friend from ESPN helped me along the way with all of this. And gave me really good points to deal with the trustees. And having said all that, you know, fast forward and we became quickly, and my plan was to quickly, we were going to be an FCS independent and move quickly to FBS. That was not our chancellor's thought. He's like, we're going to be FCS indefinitely. Okay. And I'm like, to myself, no, we're really not, because Charlotte's not going to accept FCS for long from a support standpoint, I don't think. Mm-hmm. They're going to want us to be FBS, and that's where we need to be for the size of our institution and the way our institution was growing. And you can see that today we're second largest in the North Carolina system. And so I knew that we were going to need to advance. And so I was in touch with Conference USA, which we'd been a member of before. And we left because we didn't have football, and they went all football. And we then went to the Atlantic 10, and then they welcomed us back and were very excited about us coming back to be a member with football.
You mentioned being on the men's basketball selection committee. Everybody is so captivated by college basketball in the month of March and March Madness and everybody vying for that national championship. What's it like in the room, Judy, as you try to narrow down those 68 teams that are going to compete for a national title?
People really don't realize is the amount of time that each committee member spends leading up to being in the committee room. And it's changed today. They meet more often than we met back then. But, I mean, you were assigned three conferences, and one was a major conference, and one was a mid-major, and one was a lower-level conference. And you were responsible for knowing everything about those three conferences. If a player got hurt, were they coming back? How long would they be out? And we would have, you know, monthly telephone calls. And then we would meet two or three times during the year prior to the, or two times usually prior to our actual selection. But it was interesting because you're in that room. And when you're in that room, you can't talk about your team. And now they can ask you, if somebody asks you something about your team, you can talk about them. You can talk about anybody else in your conference, but you cannot not be an advocate for your own team. And it should be that way. And so you, and the bonding that takes place in that room and the trust that is developed, never have I been on, and I've been on lots of committees and lots of NCAA committees. Never have I felt the level of trust in each other, that everybody's done their homework and are prepared. And you're watching games every night. That their own television, and not just your own. You watch other teams too, because you're going to have to vote on those other teams. So you have to be abreast of the whole big picture, but really extremely knowledgeable about your three conferences that you are dealing with. Become advocates for them.
During your time at Charlotte, Judy, your teams overall won 70 conference championships, went to 44 NCAA tournaments, the men's soccer team, a couple of College Cup appearances, the national finals. What are the keys as an athletic director to overseeing such a successful athletic department?
You have to surround yourself with good people. And when I hire people, I'm going to hire people smarter than me. And especially if I have a weak area somewhere, I'm really going to look for strength and who I'm hiring for that. And you have to nurture that group, and you have to trust that group. Now, and that group can become rather large, but you tap down into like the top 4 to 5 people that are going to be your generals, if you will, and that you have complete trust with. And you seek their opinion. You don't always make your decision based on their opinion, because many times when they said to me, "Well, we told you we thought so-and-so would be a better coach," I said, "I understand that. But here's why we're not hiring that person." They just kind of look at me, and I'm like, "Y'all, it's my responsibility, okay?" And I just disagree on this one. And so I think you hire good people, and you let them do their jobs. You don't micromanage them. If you have to micromanage them, you have not hired the right people. Now, did I make mistakes? Sure, I made mistakes. Everybody does. But you can't linger in the mistakes. And when you realize the mistake is there, sometimes you have to make a change sooner than you would have liked to have done it. But you have to do it to protect the program.
College sports have evolved so much, and I'm sure you've seen a ton of change during your career as a coach and an administrator. What do you think the state of college sports are as a whole? And what concerns do you have about the direction of college sports at large?
I got out at the right time. I retired at the perfect time. I didn't have to deal with COVID. God bless America. I mean, really, I did not. Because that was just, you know, I was on the NIT selection committee. I was actually chair that year when COVID hit, and we're having to do our selection over Zoom. And I mean, we're like, it was terrible. And in the 11th hour, of course, they canceled the tournament that year. And it's changed so much. It's not what I signed up for. I'm not being critical, and I'm not opposed to change, But I'm a true believer in amateur athletics, and I think we're shifting from amateur athletics to paid professionals is what we're doing. And I'm not opposed to change, but I'm a little bit of a dinosaur, I guess, in that I think the transfer portal is so difficult right now. You don't even know as a coach who's going to be on your team the next year. And I think we're given too much latitude there and letting just people just skip around from school to school. And I'm not sure what we're teaching young people mm-hmm. when we allow that to happen. It takes away the definition of commitment. I'm not saying you have to stay someplace a full 4 years, but I'm not sure we ought to be able to just get up and move anytime we want to. And I know a lot of people and have said, well, coaches get to change and do this. Well, coaches are paid to do their job. Yes, they can change. And I'm not saying athletes shouldn't be able to, but I think there ought to be a waiting period. So there's time for reflection. It's not always brighter on the other side. So it's a different day and age, and every day it changes. I will say that I think that the new leadership for the NCAA is very good timing. We were slow to make decisions within the NCAA. I mean, we were just very slow. And that's why I think we've ended up with where we are today, because we didn't make decisions and we weren't consistent with our penalty system either.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to end it. Thank you so much for what you've done for college athletics. Thanks for what you do for the Hall of Fame. And thank you also for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Chris. Take care.
Thanks to Judy Rose for her time on the podcast. And thanks to you for yours as well. We'll talk to you next time on our next episode of 15 Minutes of Fame. For the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame, I'm Chris Edwards.